Hi and welcome to the Volleyball Insider Podcast. Ihr hört es schon, es wird eine englischsprachige Folge, die allererste mit einem Gast, den ich sehr spannend finde, den ich schon ein bisschen verfolge, nämlich Leslie de Jonge, der quasi Gründer ist einer NGO von Let's Keep the Ball Flying. Vielleicht habt ihr schon mal davon gehört, die sich eben dafür einsetzen, dass Kinder und Jugendliche und auch Trainer und Trainerinnen Zugang zu Materialien bekommen, Bälle, Netze, aber auch Wissen, was ich vorher noch nicht wusste. Aber er wird es gleich später selbst erzählen, deswegen hoffe ich, dass es, auch wenn es auf Englisch ist, sehr viel Freude bereiten wird. An der Stelle aber noch ein kurzer Hinweis, und zwar, ich weiß nicht, vielleicht habt ihr es ja mitbekommen, ich bin ja aktiv auf Twitch und tatsächlich habe ich mir ein neues Format überlegt, die Volate Night Show, in dem ich jeden Sonntag um 20 Uhr, zumindest jeden Sonntag, wo ich Zeit habe, ein bisschen so wie heute showmäßig die Woche Revue passieren lasse, über die Spieltage spreche, was in der Presse passiert ist, kuriose Szenen, wenn es welche gab. Und würde mich freuen, wenn du mal einschaltest. Einfach bei Twitch schauen unter volley_ede. Und dann schau doch gerne mal rein. Diskutiere mit im Chat. Und vielleicht ist es ja auch interessant für dich. Würde mich sehr freuen. Ansonsten have fun with the interview, würde ich mal sagen. Yeah, hi, Leslie de Jonge is here, the first English-speaking guest for me. It's a new adventure for me, but I hope we get through it. Leslie, nice that you are here. I'm very happy.
Eduard, thank you so much for inviting me. I know it's your first English guest, so can be a little bit nervous for you. I'm happy to hear to help you out, and let's do this. I'm excited. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. Leslie, I don't have no idea about you as a person. I read your name. I know how you are looking, but I don't know anything about you. Where are you from? Where are you right now?
Good question. Where I'm from? I am from the Netherlands, so we're neighbors. Okay. So if you need to ask me some things in German, you could try. Sometimes it works. And I live right now, honestly, nowhere. I am officially non-resident of any country since last week.
Really? You're homeless?
Yeah. you could say it that way. Yeah, which is also for me the first time. I have been always a Dutch resident. I've been living mostly in Italy the last year. Mm-hmm. And but since last week, I'm officially a non-resident. So I don't officially live nowhere. And that's simply because I am traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. Never longer than 183 days in the same location. So by law, I have to deregister from the Netherlands, which I should have done potentially already 3 years ago, and I never did. Sorry, law. But the time has come. But I think pretty soon I will be a resident of Italy in the next 2 years.
Oh, okay. So Italy is where you're looking forward to have your residence.
And yeah, absolutely.
Is it because it's too expensive to pay a room where you don't live, or how did it become to this?
Well, I've been a volleyball coach all my life, right? So being a professional coach is kind of already a nomad existence, where depending on where you have your job, you change places, similar to athletes, of course. But when I started Let's Keep the Ball Flying, things changed quite a bit. In 2022, I sold my house in the Netherlands to be more free and also more financially free to build this project further. And through that, I've just been nonstop traveling, and I'm sure you can relate, and everybody who is listening can relate to this. Our volleyball community in the world is huge. We are one of the biggest sports, but at the same time, we're all a family. Everybody knows everybody. One phone call away, and you're connected to one famous coach or player. It's such a community, and everybody is willing to help. And so through all my travels, there were, no matter where I went, there were always people ready to host me, to help me out, to provide me a place to stay, or you know, bring me to new locations or new places, invite me or introduce me to new people. And that's been a huge, huge blessing. And yeah, I'm sure that everybody that's listening can relate to that. It's a big power of our sport.
Nice. Yeah, sounds very good. But where are you right now? Is it a player's house or?
So my girlfriend, Viola Tonello, she's a player here in Italy. Uh-huh. And I'm currently with her in the mountains in the north of Italy. And ooh, that's okay. a short time. I feel very lucky to be here right now. But in about 4 or 5 weeks, I'll be heading to Tanzania in Africa for a week. Mm-hmm. Where we run one of our projects. And in December, I'll be in the USA, in California 2 weeks, and then Kansas City for the AVCA coaches convention. And then 2026 is going to be an insane year with a lot of travels. Before then, 2027, I'm expecting to settle down a little bit here in Italy. So it's a crazy program.
In Südtirol, or where is it?
In Val d'Aosta, very close to the Mont Blanc.
Ah, okay. Next to France.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Can't complain, right?
So, Leslie, you told already you are a volleyball coach. When and where did you get in touch with volleyball?
I was 5 years old when I started playing. Oh. I saw simply my dad playing volleyball on a camping, grass volleyball, very, recreational level. And as a kid, I was watching and I wanted to play from that moment. So my parents asked me, don't you want to play football or something else? I said, no, I want to play volleyball. So started when I was 5 and never stopped. I have to say that in the beginning of my youth, I was very ambitious, wanted to become the best, wanted to become a professional, national team, etc. The big dream, Olympics. But soon when I was 14, I was very lucky that I grew up in a club in the Netherlands called Sudoza. It's one of the biggest youth clubs of the country. And I would say now my second mom at that time, she was a very, very good youth development coach. And she invited me to become one of her assistants, you know, with kids that were the same age as me, which has nothing to do with me. It's like they always ask youth to come and do a coach course and help out with, because it's just such a big club. They always need extra coaches. Yeah. So their strategy is to educate already young players to become coach. Very cool. So that's where my eyes opened to the position of being a coach. So from my age of 14 till now, I've been every year coaching. And soon, towards my early or late teens years, I knew that coaching was going to be my thing. I wanted to be a professional coach, not necessarily a professional player. And that gave me a very large head start of coaching since I was 14. And instead of, you know, starting to coach after your player career or on a much later date. And my goal was simple. If I start now, I have a 15-year head start on all the top players that become coach. And hopefully that helps me reaching my dream. So that's a little bit the background of my volleyball story. And when I was 27, I took my first professional job in the Netherlands Women's League, in the highest league. And all the years before that, I was a head coach of a team and also traveling to other countries. Basically, and really, this is a tip I would like to give everyone who is listening. Like I said before, our community is so big, but so small. It doesn't matter who you write an email when it comes to the volleyball community as a coach. I know a lot of coaches listen to your podcast.
Okay.
They're nice. Always happy to, you know, for you to come and help out, for you to come at the practice and see how they are working. And for me, it really worked because in those early years, I traveled a lot of times. I saved my money as much as I could for to in the off seasons or pre seasons to be with teams in Italy, Turkey, USA, you know, national teams, to just come, collect balls and see how they are working. And they would always say, yes, yeah, you're more than welcome. And then once you're there and talking to them, you can ask them more questions and learn more. And that was just such a huge, huge, huge part of growing my volleyball network, but also my knowledge as a coach. And yeah, it's a tip I would like to give everyone. Get out there, ask people to come and see their practice if it's possible for you. And I'm sure even in Germany, in the Bundesliga, most coaches are more than happy to have you come over and help out for a few days and see how they are working.
Okay, sounds very good. Because I'm since, I think, a bit more than a month, I'm a coach for children, 20 mm-hmm. children. Yeah, sometimes I think, I don't know, does it make sense what I'm doing here? Or, but mm-hmm. I try that to the children have fun. But it's very important to have new inspiration, ideas, and so on. So yeah, very good advice. Thank you. So where and when did you have the idea for your mission, Let's Keep the Ball Flying? That's the main topic for today, because we want to know, why did you have the idea? What was the reason?
So 2017, not mistaken. Yeah, I was 27 years old and I took my first professional coaching job in the Netherlands. And at the same time, the Dutch Federation gave me a phone call asking me if I wanted to become the national team coach of Team Nepal.
Okay. And the Dutch Federation asked you.
Yeah. I will explain you how that happened. It's a funny story. So you can imagine me picking up my phone and, do you realize that people nowadays pick up the phone with the hand like this next to the face instead of our old school days?
Yeah.
Anyway, of course I said yes, because what an experience being national team coach of an Asian team, you know, a chance to go to the Asian Games, one of the biggest tournaments in the world. And yes, I am in, of course. Super cool. I had no idea why they were calling me, because I was just a beginning coach, you know, first year in a professional job and already this offer. Anyway, let me say yes, because before they change their mind. And that was a life-changing experience, Eduard, really. 3 years in Nepal absolutely changed my life upside down. And it was as simple as, all right, when you're a national team coach, a professional coach, your job is to win games, to take care of your team. And every week you're taking care of your team to either win or lose the game and, you know, go from hotel to hotel, from gym to gym, and work with your staff as intense and as much as possible to reach your goals. And with all respect, that's it. You need to be all in and all focused on just those topics to become successful. It's not to, you know, to win the Champions League, it's not possible to focus on your job with your team and do another job on the side. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And in my experience with the Nepal national team, I had so much fun. I loved it. It was a highlight of my career to be in Indonesia, 2018 Asian Games, opening ceremony in the big state stadium, walking with all the countries and like the Olympics, you know, like walking into that stadium and seeing that opening show and playing on that stage as a coach with our team after 33 years of not having been there was that was huge for me. At the same time, I will tell you a few stories, but at the same time, I've experienced a lot of stories there in Nepal that make me feel, whoa, I'm spending all my life building this career as a coach, winning hotel in, hotel out, while there are so many people that don't have access to our sport like we do, that have difficult situations in life and still walk 2 hours to come to a practice without shoes and then 2 hours back every day just to play volleyball in a very old-fashioned level, you know, where a coach is tossing a ball and kids standing in line for 5 minutes touching one ball, you know, like this type of stories and motivation at the same time, because the sport can really impact and change people's life from coming out of a coming out of nothing to becoming a national team player. Imagine if that's your life, where you barely have money to take care of yourself, but you have to take care of your family. And simply by the choice of going to play volleyball, that changes everything. And physically, I'm mentioning here a story of Kopila, a national team player of Nepal women. And I have so many stories like this that just opened my eyes to a whole new dimension, a whole new level. And that's where the first sparks of the idea of Let's Keep the Ball Flying started. So side note here, why the Dutch Federation called me. So we have the World Congress every 2 or 4 years from the World Volleyball Federation, FIVB. And all nations, all volleyball federations are in this big Congress room. And everybody's sitting on alphabetical order. So the president of the Netherlands and the president of the Nepal Federation are sitting right next to each other. And our president, he is still the president, by the way, Mr. Peter Sprenger, and of the Nepal Federation at that time, Mr. Manoranjan Sharma, they talked with each other on, wow, you know, two complete different countries. Netherlands, a country in the volleyball world that is organizing, if I'm not mistaken, the most amateur events based on the amount of people playing volleyball in the world.
Okay.
We have not so strong professional culture in our country, but the amateur level is huge. And Nepal, not even being FIVB ranked at that moment, you know, how can we help each other? How can we support each other? And Mr. Manoranjan is a phenomenal person. He knows how to make somebody laugh, no matter where he or she is from. Great guy. And, you know, they just started chatting with each other. How can we help? And not necessarily from a economical or, you know, capitalism point of view, but just as a family. So big brother, little sister, how can we help each other? And that's where kind of a pilot project arised, led by the Dutch Federation, together with the Nepal Federation, and also the FIVB was involved. And part of the role of the Dutch Federation was to give a national team coach to Nepal and guide. So in the first summer, Mr. Coach Matt van Wezel, now in India, coaching in the Prime League, and before operational director, if I'm not mistaken, from the Norway volleyball beach and indoor. He did the first weeks in Nepal, and then he took a new job offer to become the national team coach of Norway, which he took. So the position came free. And I remember the day like yesterday when Matt and Peter from the Dutch Federation and me had a conversation together about, okay, how we are going to prepare to arrive in a country like Nepal as a national team coach. And because trust me, that is a conversation you need to have, because obviously as a professional coach, you want all the details worked out. You want to know exactly when we're training, what we're going to do, you know, what time the bus is coming is planned out, right? But once you arrive in Nepal, everything goes different. they don't work in the way structure. Dutch people and German people, how we are punctual, like you even more than us. But it just doesn't work like that. And another funny side, I'm going from side note to side note. Let me know if I'm going too much off topic. But
no, that's why you're here.
We did also the South Asian Games in Kathmandu in Nepal. Huge tournament, absolutely huge for that country. And, you know, imagine you're going to the Olympics for the first time with your team, your national team. Wow, crazy. We made it. And the opening match is on Saturday and you have to play the opening match. And the day before, you have a practice on that arena venue, you know, to prepare for the game. So Nepal people, they are really, truly the most kind people I've ever met in my life. And, you know, they would invite the opponent team to come and play on the match venue. And we, home nation, first time, would play 1 hour away in some outdoor side courts to practice ourselves. But how about hospitality? have you ever seen that in sports? It was crazy. And I've worked with our team on punctuality because, of course, it's important to at least have some form of punctuality when we want to perform at a tournament like that. So when the tournament started, my team was prepared. Okay, if coach says at 7:30 we need to be ready to leave for the bus, they will be there at 7:25, you know. And because it was the big tournament, I even told them, okay, we are ready at 7:15, just extra precaution. And so I was so proud to know that everybody was ready at that time. But you know who was not ready and was still sitting at the breakfast table reading a newspaper, finishing his breakfast? The bus driver. So, you know, like really, really funny, crazy stories like that made a huge impact. But
so it doesn't matter how good you are prepared, there's always something you didn't imagine of.
it's about the flexibility. Yeah. And that's exactly the reason why the Dutch Federation called me, I learned later, because I've been traveling so much. I've been working with so many different coaches, different cultures, volleyball, all over the world. And yeah, in the Netherlands, I was, okay, young, but upcoming, you know, first year in the pro league. And they wanted to give me an opportunity to grow my career further. And since I had that experience with so many different cultures, they thought, okay, that might be a good fit.
Okay.
And I'm grateful for them for the rest of my life for that decision, because without that decision, Let's Keep the Ball Flying wouldn't have started. Because there in Nepal, it's where my first seeds of the foundation, like how can we do more for the sport? That's where it started.
Honestly, I don't have any idea about the Nepal national team. What was the level you found there? Was it women, men?
It was men.
Men, okay.
And also involved with the women, women a little bit. And they were not ranked FIFB. Now they are. I'm not sure where they are ranked currently. I believe in my third year, they were somewhere at 74, 75 ranking. When I arrived, the players were really good. They were really, really good, very athletic. They're all guys coming from the army. You know, if one would twist his ankle the next day, he was playing again. Crazy jumpers. They were not so tall, but crazy jumpers. And so in terms of good level, we could compare them with, I would say, the Dutch league, a pro men. But there was one problem, because they were so creative and you know, they were not caring so much about mistakes. So when you attack on the pipe, second line, and they would make a foot mistake, nobody would call it, you know, okay. Or somebody touches the net, no problem, we play anyway.
Let's keep the ball flying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the level in terms of what they were able to do was good, but they just made a lot of mistakes, which would bring the level a lot down. Mm-hmm. So yeah, our first months of practice were really focused on actually following the rules. You know, that would help a lot, reducing the mistakes and the personal errors. And that brought the level up quite quickly before we entered moving into more systems and different ways of playing aligned with their culture and their type of players. You can compare it with that.
Okay, interesting. So Leslie, let's talk about your project or your mission, when I can say it. What are you doing there? Can you explain it? What are your targets? What are your projects? I want to know everything.
So, I mean, the mission of Let's Keep the Ball Flying is those two effects of our sport, right? So the family part, the social part, where everybody knows everybody, where everybody wants to help everybody. That's the strength one. And to bottle that and then connect it to how our sport can impact people and put that together, that was my initial goal. Mm-hmm. And our sport is no physical contact, very social, like we're singing and cheering for each other. You know, you have to work together to keep that ball in the air. So it's such a big team effort. And those factors make the sport very efficient in building community, in social impact, and creating new friendships for people, and that's just so important part that is already there that we can then use to impact people's lives. So usually when somebody asks us what is the mission of Let's Keep the Ball Flying, I say, yeah, our mission is to unite the world through volleyball, and we do that by sharing the love of the sport and creating access, especially access, so balls, nets, materials, and empowerment, so educating coaches. A little bridge there, because I'm not sure how is this in Germany. Maybe you can tell me more about it. But when I travel all over the world, most places where we come, we still see very old-fashioned training where a coach is tossing a ball and kids are standing in line forever to touch one ball. And that's not because they don't, you know, it's simply because people don't know how we can make our practices more efficient and how to learn better, because the knowledge is not necessarily available everywhere. And in the first years of Let's Keep the Ball Flying, we have learned so many lessons, but the two key lessons that we learned is, people from, you know, that run their own social projects in Africa, Asia, Latin America, but also in Europe, also in our own countries. The main question is not necessarily about money. I need money to do things. No, it's about, do you have an extra ball? I have 50 kids. I have two volleyballs, of which one is half broken. You know, okay. I need an extra ball. That would double the touches of my kids, you know. Yeah. And of course, extra nets to build more courts. And mm-hmm. and then once that access to nets and balls and even shoes would be fixed, then the next question is, okay, now I have 50 kids and four balls. How do I organize my practice? Because if you go to YouTube, and one of our main coaches for our grassroots program, Mr. John Kessel from the USA, he's literally a grassroots legend in my opinion. Everybody who have ever attended a clinic from him is also life-changing for you as a coach. So we'll get back to that on your last question of the podcast. But you know, how to then organize your practice with 50 kids and four balls, that's very difficult. Yeah. And if you go to YouTube and you look for volleyball exercises, there are millions of results, you know, of things you can do. But
yeah,
99
I have
of
20
those
kids with 30 balls, and it's difficult.
Exactly. Amazing example. So, you know, it's nice to find a lot of videos on how to run your practice in a gym with a perfectly set up net and a coach and a ball box of at least 12, usually in our countries, more balls available to actually practice, where you almost have one ball per kid. In 80% in the world of volleyball, there is not this access. It's not there.
Wow.
So why should we not pay attention to that and change that? So, and then my second thought here is that so many projects, and there are so many people, Eduard, really, in volleyball that have this dream of, I want to be a volleyball coach and I want to help my team grow and get bigger opportunities in life. But they have absolutely zero access to a federation, to equipment, to material, and especially knowledge on how to do this. So with Let's Keep the Ball Flying, we want to change this. We want to help. So we want to provide access to these materials for free without any cost involved. And we want to build an online community platform that we call Guru, and where we provide this access. So we've recorded hundreds of videos recorded in Africa, in Asia, this summer in Latin America, where we show them, okay, how to create your own volleyball from plastic bags and rope. And trust me, they work. How to tighten any volleyball net with a special knot technique that is super simple, and you could build it anywhere just having a rope. So how to build more nets, but also how to organize your practice session when you have 50 kids and two balls, what you do, you know? And so over the last 3 years, we have been building this platform, and with the main goal of giving it away for free. Like, nobody has to pay for it. There is no business perspective behind this. There is just the social thought on, let's help each other grow the sport and build a global grassroots community. And then you are mentioning yourself, I have 20 kids and 20 balls, and that's still already difficult. So I would recommend all the coaches that are listening, go to our website and see what the Guru Project is about, because all these grassroots videos on what to do is not only effective for coaches in those type of regions, but also ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's magical. And it's so cool. And then to be connected, you know, I'm very proud of one of our local project leaders. His name is Renovatus Sixmund, his full name. We call him Six. That's his nickname. And he's from Tanzania. And in 2021, in the beginning of Let's Keep Ball Flying, we got connected. And he was a coach of a university team in Tanzania, in Moshi. You know, and he was exactly this type of guy that was just looking for, hey, I need some extra balls. I would love to build my club, my team, and do more in the community around it and the schools around it. And he started from scratch. But in the last 3-4 years that we've been working with him, we're now adopting next year 24 schools in his region that he is leading. We hired one local project coordinator under him that is managing and coordinating all those schools. We've provided a ton of balls and nets to build. And don't think that this is an indoor gym with a proper volleyball net. No, it's an outdoor space next to the school with trees and sand, not beach volleyball sand, like dirt. Mm. And they're hanging ropes, and those ropes change into actual nets that got donated by us or people that came and visit. And, you know, we provided jerseys for those schools, for the teams, to make them feel like they are actually a team. And we're developing the coaches on our online platform and giving access and visiting them, providing coach courses, and to see that grow. And now to see that Six actually got a project application accepted from the FIVB for extra funding as well. That's the journey that we're looking for, you know, empower local coaches to make that journey from a beginning coach to a community leader and really build volleyball communities from scratch into magical projects. I realize I'm giving you a very long answer on your question on what's our mission.
No, it's perfect. It's very interesting. I can learn a lot from you, and I will definitely take a look at the Guru page. But how did you choose, or how do you choose where the projects you focus about? Do people have to apply from Tanzania or something else? Or how did you find those spots where to empower the people?
Yeah, important question. And this is where sometimes we have to do some due diligence on explaining where we're coming from. So in 2020, we started with nothing. You know, I had contacts in Nepal. I knew a few people. And the idea was just to start. So in the beginning of the foundation, we were just collecting gear. Mm-hmm. You know, and on my birthday, I hosted a fundraiser. Don't give me presents. Just make a donation to the charity and we can send some more balls and nets to people. You know, it was simple as that. And so I tried through connections, through internet, through social media, to just find people that are doing something that I'm looking for, and then tell their story. So I would write blog articles on, hey, this is Six in Tanzania. Hey, this is Joshua in Uganda, you know, and look what they're doing. And it was as simple as that. And the more we grew, the more we could help. We just sticked with those people that we already knew. And that was the first phase. And we made quite a distinction because we had people requesting support. We even had federations requesting support. But there was a very significant difference in the ask, I would say. And this might make you laugh, but we had a federation from Africa. I won't name names, but also simple coaches in rural locations in the world that would send us an email and they would say, we need 500 balls, 100,000 euros of project support. I remind you, this is one person. Okay. What? Excuse me? Okay, so we had these type of people, and we had people that said, hey guys, if you have one ball to spare, I would be so extremely happy. But most of all, can we have a chat? Can you help me? And, you know, this is what I'm doing. And they would show photos and, you know, send a lot of information on what they were doing. And the only thing that we're asking for was one ball. And that were the people that we chose to work with. Mm-hmm. It was a simple filter, a simple selection of finding motivation versus personal gain and financial gain, et cetera. And now we're 5 years ahead and we're taking, of course, we're growing. We are now 45 volunteers in the organization. So in 2 years' time, we grew from 15 to 45 people, volunteers. So it's freaking awesome to see how many people want to help and be involved in this. And towards 2030, we have set a new strategy where we will focus more. So the projects that we have tested in the last 3-4 years and that work, we will continue to invest in them more and make them bigger and scale them up. Mm-hmm. While the Let's Keep Offline DNA from the beginning is, okay, let's do new things, let's explore and just go, you know, and we'll see along the way. We grow our wings on after jumping.
Do you have an example of projects that didn't work? Do you want to share it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would more say that that worked, but just short term. So okay. It would have been something that either we were there to visit and donate gear and equipment and, you know, then leave, and it not necessarily sustainable. Mm-hmm. Or projects that, for example, with USC Münster in Germany, they mm-hmm. donated a lot of gear and materials, and we got that to one of the projects in Syria and was great. They sent us a lot of photos and videos, and it was very cool to see that happen. But then sadly, 1 year later, that project stopped. And it had more to do, I think, with the coach that was leading that moving away from Syria. Mm-hmm. And then the project dropped, you know, and yeah. That's sad. And so we have learned a lot of lessons along the way. So now I would say that we're much more ready as an organization to invest in projects that are running sustainably for the long term, work with local ambassadors that we trust, that we have already worked for multiple years in a row, while still keeping 20% in our organization available for that roots, you know, that DNA of doing new things. Mm-hmm. So we have literally a budget reserved in our total budget for new things. So if people apply and want help or support, or even our own volunteers come with an idea, you know, we always want to have that little bucket of, all right, let's stay open for new. It's very important.
Okay. So what are the kind of projects you want to focus about now? What are successful?
The absolute key that we want to focus on is to empower coaches, because mm-hmm. coaches are the accelerators of everything. If we empower one coach, we know that he or she will empower a whole community around it. So this is our main target, and that can be anywhere in the world, as the platform that we have built, the Guru platform, is accessible to anyone that has a phone and internet. Even the videos are recorded for cell phone, not for a computer. And so that's a big project that we continue to invest in, and where we also host global leaders. So we have, for example, a global leader in Tanzania, in the Gambia, in India. And they are coaches that are the type of people that put that extra work in. And we're guiding them extra. We have a monthly video call also there with John Kessel and me, where we are just available to talk with all the coaches that come and join and help them out. You know, they have instant access to this mentorship and guidance and support without the need of financial anything. So this is a very key project for us, and the people that are successful on our platform are also directly the people we want to help and support further and build those local community hubs wherever they are in the world. So that's one. And two, we have also some extra side projects like Volleyball Beyond Borders, we call it, which is very much connected to refugees. Mm-hmm. So we build volleyball communities around refugee camps, which we have been doing since the beginning with our partner Yoga and Sports for Refugees in Greece, around Lesbos and two other locations, Athens, Ioannina. And we just see how the social part of our sport can just impact community and people in very vulnerable, mental, unstable situations. So that's another focus area. But yeah, the main thing for us is to empower coaches, and through that empowerment also, you know, tell their stories and share the love of the game and what's possible with playing volleyball.
Okay. So how about you? Is it a full-time job, or do you still do it if you have some time?
Yeah. So in the beginning I was a volleyball coach, and I did this on the side. Mm-hmm. The first 2 years then after 2 years, I had to make a decision because there was really a lot of opportunity to build this further and but not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So it was a tricky situation. And I had to make a decision for, okay, I had the option to become assistant coach in Münster, mm-hmm. in the Bundesliga. That would mean full-time all in, right? Obviously, we talked about it in the beginning. Or I could go back to the club where I grew up and make the circle full. They asked me to become head coach of the women's team, and to their goal was to become champion and promote to the first league. And that was not a full-time job. It was part-time. So I said, fuck it, I'm going to do that so I can continue to work on my mission with the foundation, because that's really that woke me up so passionate every morning. And 1 year later, it was COVID. You know, COVID started to happen. So, yeah. I mean, we all have our own connections and experiences with COVID. For me, it meant I was not able to work in the gym for several months, but I did had a lot of time to work on the foundation behind my laptop. So that was kind of a blessing. And then 1 year later, the next season, we made it. We became champion with the team. And that was for me such a full circle. Like, wow, I'm back home to my club where I know almost everybody, and an amazing year. The girls, the team was, I just had such an amazing year that year. And in the end, in that positive energy, a lot of people call it a stupid move. I sold the only hard asset that I owned, my house. I sold it to be financially free for 3 years. And I could, you know, I quit everything, sold everything, and continued to build Let's Keep the Ball Flying and travel around for 3 years and get the community together to help out and join. And that was a risky decision, but the best decision of my life. The people that I've met in the last 3 years, you know, and everybody I'm sure can relate also to this volleyball. You meet your best friends, your wife, your husband. You know, I met my future wife, I would say, through this, you know, 3 years of travel. And Let's Keep the Ball Flying grew to watch 45 volunteers and running all of these projects and working with Modena Volley and Monza in Italy to the leagues in America. Having Jan Zimmerman is one of our ambassadors, and mm-hmm. Kimberly Droniok also. And we have the 30 of the best athletes in the world donating 1% of their volleyball salary to our foundation. That's insane. What? I could have never imagined this to happen. So it's been a magical 3 years, 5 years, I have to say. And couldn't be more proud and grateful for everybody that is involved and helping out.
Okay. So how it's possible to support you as a as a player, as a someone like me who is, how can we support you? Do you need balls, nets, or... do you need money for bigger projects? I don't know. Everything.
I will try, because there are really a lot of ways that mm-hmm. you can be involved and support. And if you really want to know more, just check out our website, letskeeptheballflying.com or lktbf.org, and explore more. But to keep it very simple, yes, we always need balls and nets. Mm. Not necessarily jerseys or gear. We have a lot. Trust
500
me.
500 balls for this one person.
Yeah, that's funny, no? The 500 ball situation. But yeah, imagine we do take 500 balls as a donation coming from the German volleyball community, and we give 10 balls to each of the schools that we support in Africa. That's huge. That's mm-hmm. really, really huge. And I know also in the Netherlands, we, you know, the pro clubs, you know, we have at least 10 balls each year that are being written off, you know, that need to go out. And in Africa, it doesn't matter if it's a new or an old ball, like they will find a way to use it properly. Mm-hmm. And trust me, if it's a brand new Mikasa volleyball, it's not even ideal because they have never seen a brand new Mikasa ball in their life. So when they see one and receive one, they're not going to play with it. They will put it, you know, next to their pillar as a trophy. Yeah, exactly. So it's better to bring old balls. All jokes aside, this is actually a true story. Okay. But how to support? Okay. So one thing that has been very successful over the last 1 year and a half that I would love everybody to have a look at is that right now you can adopt your own volleyball team with Let's Keep the Ball Flying, which means you will be adopting your personal team of 7 or 8 players in the schools that we support in Kenya or Tanzania. And you provide them with actually match jerseys, gear, balls that we locally produce, access to volleyball coaching, training support, at least 3 times per week practice, and access to tournaments and events that we organize together with them, locally led. So there is no Let's Keep the Ball Flying volunteer or person that we're paying that has to fly there every month or whatever. You know, we really run that locally. Mm-hmm. And with €75 per month, you can adopt your own volleyball team and support them. Mm-hmm. I think that's really great. And then to build on top of that, I would suggest everyone after 1 year to then actually go and visit your school, because that's really life-changing. And we are offering, Let's Keep the Ball Flying is the charity partner of this, but together with Bring It Promotions from the USA, we're running something that's called Volleycation. And you can find this on our website as well. And we have our first dates open next summer. The end of May is our a 10-day trip. And the beginning of June is another 10-day trip where you will actually come with us. And if you're lucky, for example, in the next summer, Anna Danesi, Olympic gold medalist, world champion, captain of Italy, is coming with us. She is adopting a team as well. So we'll be visiting that team. You get the chance to travel with us, visit those schools, play volleyball with them, run a training session while also doing safari. You know, there's amazing nature in Tanzania and really build friendships for life. We have a very cool video of our trip last summer in Africa. And once you see that, it's just wow. If you're into this type of things, it's a unique opportunity to come and join, support your own team, and have a really life-changing experience. Because we come to think we're going to help people and do good and make an impact. But it's really also a mirror. Once we are in that process and having been there, our own perspective is completely changing. We're getting... you know, we start to understand also our own situation and how privileged we are. And we start to appreciate more our own situation. And it's just such an empowering experience. So yeah, check that out. And of course, there are plenty of other ways to help and support on the website. But yeah, I would love to highlight this adopted team and then actually go and visit your team the next summer.
Sounds like a great experience. Leslie, sadly, we have to come to an end. I'm sure you have other stories too. You can share it, but yeah, the time is pretty over.
Going fast, huh?
Yeah.
1 hour already.
But there's one question I always have at the end of my podcast. I'm really excited. What person should be here as a guest that you are would listen to it?
Yeah, that's very easy. You can guess it already, but our guru head coach, Mr. John Castle, he is 72 years old right now. He traveled 2 years with us to film all these materials as a 71-year-old at that point, you know, hiking in the mountains of the Philippines. Like, I had several heart attacks, like him losing his balance but it all went good. And he has so much coaching knowledge to share with the world. His heart is amazing. And everybody should have the chance to listen to him. It's going to be another English interview.
Oh, yeah, you, I hope I didn't do it so worse today.
You did great, Eduard, really. And okay. I would, if you want, I connect you with John. It would be a great, great, great guest for your podcast.
Okay, sounds very good. Leslie, thank you for your time. It was very interesting for me, mind-blowing, as I can say it. And yeah, I hope you have success in the future. I hope I can give you a bit of reach with my podcast, that people know you and help you, support you. And maybe there's one listener who take the journey to Tanzania. That would, yeah, for me, a very, yeah, I would say I did a good job then. And yeah, I hope you... don't lose your effort and motivation to keep the ball flying.
Great. Thank you so much, Eduard. And that might be a nice next podcast as well. Somebody that comes on the journey and tell their story. All right. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your effort. And the English was great. Really good job. And I'm happy to come again whenever you need.
Of course. Thank you.